television activist shell, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. And it's always a pleasure to receive the segue baton from Mitch Jezrich, great teammate. It was he who convened our fantastic coverage, at least, of the Republican convention, and we tried at the Democratic convention. There we go. But yeah, teammates, democracy, experiment in radio democracy. It is so wonderful. You know, KPFA is touting and promoting this film, What is Democracy?, that I've watched and will watch many times. So we are welcoming, hosting the director, Astra Taylor, director of the essential to now beautiful, powerful film, What is Democracy? It's offered as a pledge enticement, a magnetizer. Again, you can, for a $120 pledge to this democratic experiment in radio, you can have this DVD, which you want to show, and we will explain why it's so useful to converse by calling 1-800-439-5732 or online, kpfa.org. So Astra is also the author of Democracy May Not Exist, But We'll Miss It When It's Gone. I must get that. We've got to do another show, Astra. She's a debt collectivist. And again, you can find a description of the film, which I'm about to read you, zeitgeistfilms.com/film/ What is Democracy? Her Twitter handle is at Astra Disastra. I love that, because to avert disaster, let's gather to consider con with Sitter of the Stars, Disaster Against the Stars. So the write-up on the film, coming at a moment of profound political and social crisis, yes, What is Democracy reflects on a word we too often take for granted. Astra Taylor's idiosyncratic philosophical journey spans millennia and continents, from ancient Athens' groundbreaking experiment in self-government to capitalism's roots in medieval Italy, from modern-day Greece grappling with financial collapse and a mounting refugee crisis to the United States reckoning with its racist past and present and the growing gap between rich and poor. It features a fabulous cast, celebrated theorists, trauma surgeons, activists, factory workers, asylum seekers, former prime minister. This urgent for now film connects the past and the present, the emotional and the intellectual, the personal and the political, in order to provoke and inspire. If we want to live in democracy, we must first ask what the word even means. Welcome, Astra.
Wow, thanks for having me, and thank you so much for that kind introduction.
Oh, no, but it is, I you know, part of the frame of the Visionary Activist Show is like where there's uninitiated Mars and hyper-yang death frenzy and whatever, we want Venus beauty from that land, from Syria, from whatever. And I think that's what's so, one of the things that's so powerful about your film is it's deep and very beautiful. It's very beautiful. So thank you for the beauty of it and us are reminding ourselves. So to toss something to you, I find this, it's the wail of Persephone in the background. That's right, the emergency is going on everywhere. But I find this film and your work, and I want to know more and more and more about it forever, so essential to now. I live outside D.C., and so on behalf of the Progressive Berkeley team, I cross borders to talk with many people, as you do, who have very different points of view. Climate views a hoax, and, you know, Trump is a great guy, whatever. But what I always come back to is, well, what's your definition of a of a good government? And they go, And a lot of people will go to, the purpose of governance is protection of the collective, you know, of the Commonwealth, even those. Anyway, so now back to you. So grateful for this, deep excavation and stirring of the conversing, right? The conversation that you want to spiral out there into the world, that we can have an essential smart conversation, right?
Yeah, and I think so much of the film, it's nice to be on radio because we don't have to worry about the visual, but the thing about making a film is that you get to direct the viewer's attention and so really help people, you know, pay attention to other human beings and other perspectives and points of view. And so my mantra to myself as I was making this film was to really approach every single person that I spoke to as if they were a philosopher, So to really ask them seriously, you know, what does democracy mean to you? What is your definition of justice? What is your idea of good government, of a good life? And to approach people as, you know, as thinking beings, because I think one problem with our democracy, you know, speaking as an American, right, going back to the foundation of this country, was a distrust of people. And this distrust of democracy actually goes all the way back. As the film shows, it goes back to Plato, to the foundation of Western political philosophy. But, you know, I wanted to experiment in extending trust, actually. And I think that that's where the beauty of the film comes from, because I tried very hard to have an aesthetic that was very humble. There's not a lot of gratuitous drone shots. There's not any fancy animations. The beauty is in people, and in the people, I think in trying to reveal just their innate dignity, the dignity we all have. And that's what that was sort of one aspect that I was trying to convey alongside, you know, more philosophical concepts, you know, a basic political education, thinking about the history of capitalism, et cetera. I also just wanted to show people's dignity and thoughtfulness.
Right. No, this is so essential because, you know, in the 30s, you know, 20s and 30s in America, Emma Goldman and the like, you know, were speaking at small gathering places in small cities in Baltimore and Providence and whatever, where there was collective and working class conversation about this, you know, before she was sent back, send her back. Emma Goldman got sent back repeatedly. But I also love so much in the film, but towards the end, you're speaking to a beautiful young woman from Syria, from Aleppo, and mm-hmm. and so much of that, you ask her to define freedom and democracy, and with so many of the really powerfully interesting people, you know, from Afghanistan or Pakistan or Syria or Honduras, they have a ready answer. That they are ready. They've thought about this. And she says, you know, many things that you can remind us of, but it ends with, to put our head on a pillow and not have nightmares.
Yeah, this powerful name. I mean, Salam's name means peace. She's 21. And one of the pleasures of making documentary films for someone like me, who is generally an introvert, I spend a lot of time at home reading books. So I, you know, have to get rather psyched to get out of the house and approach strangers with a crew. But one thing, you know, I, and so when I'm doing that, you know, it's like, well, who do I want to talk to? Who catches my eye? And I was there at the Port of Piraeus in Greece, outside of Athens, which in the film, there's this sort of full circle movement, because I use the text of Plato's Republic as a kind of motif, kind of thought-provoking motif, and also something to remind us just of a sort of longer time horizon. And actually, Salam, like thousands and thousands of other refugees, arrived at the Port of Piraeus. So 2,500 years later, this is still a site of democratic contestation, revitalization, and the assertion that, you know, a multiplicity of voices matter. And so Salam, I saw her out of the corner of my eye because she was standing up for herself. And I thought, okay, this is the kind of, I'm curious to hear more about this young woman. And she, you know, like so many others, had been forced to flee. She didn't want to come to Europe, right? But she was in a situation that was totally untenable. Her mother had been shot by a stray bullet while sitting in their kitchen. And so she and her 18-year-old brother fled, and they went on a small boat over the Aegean, and I met them at this moment, and she, like so many others, was saying, you know, this idea of human rights that Europe and the West supposedly stands up for, you know, these are important principles. Why aren't they being enacted, right? We want democracy. We want freedom, which depends on security. It depends on being able to sleep through the night without being afraid. It depends on having our basic needs met. And this sort of basic, you know, bodily integrity, a baseline of security, of health, that actually democracy depends on. And it's been quite interesting. Most people really get it, but there have been exchanges with audience members where someone stands up, usually someone rather privileged, someone who doesn't seem to have struggled a lot in their life, and they say, I don't get it. Why in a film about democracy are you talking about, you know, the need for safety? You know, I think democracy is just about procedures, about voting and stuff like that. And I think one thing the film is trying to do, and most people grasp it right away, which is, you know, this idea of the social body is both a political idea. It is these political procedures. It's how we structure our government. But it's also, you know, it's also literally our bodies, ourselves, you know, and whether we, and the film tries to show this through interviews with trauma surgeons and in different health clinics in Greece and in the U.S., you know, whether people are sick, whether they're cared for, whether they're under stress, whether they can pay their medical bills, right? These forms of trauma are actually political diseases that stem from inequality, stem from whether people are being represented. And so the social body is a multifaceted metaphor. And the film really tries to illustrate that. And I think Salaam does it really beautifully.
She does. And you also ask her, and you say, what would you do first? Get people out of these camps, she says.
Yeah.
Right. Get people out of these camps. And then there's the extraordinary moment that resonates throughout your film, which we are offering for a pledge of $120 to KPFA by calling 1-800-439-5732. Just to slip that in there. You know, where she's describing her mother being shot, and she begins to smile and actually laugh, but in a way that we understand. It's, you know, and then it turns into and it's a I'm not sure what it is, but it's also, there's the other moment where you're speaking to a beautiful immigrant woman in a factory, I can't remember her name either, saying, you know, her hopes and fears, and you say, and how is it now? And there's this, you do get these very strong moments, and she just goes, oh, it's not so good now, you know. But it's, you're there. I mean, you are with her. You are with Salaam. You are in that dynamic. And that's so we're all in this global dynamic. But there is a lot of great history, and you do, you know. Also, let's bring in the Afghani man raised in Pakistan. What is democracy? And he says justice.
Yeah, that was a very striking answer for me, justice, because so many Americans that I asked Americans on the street, I went and I even set up my little film shop outside the New York Stock Exchange, you know, what is democracy? And most people say freedom. And that's about as far as it would go in some conversations, freedom, elections. There's something very powerful for me when Abid said justice. And he also, I felt, posed a challenge to people on the left, like myself, who sometimes don't fully appreciate what it's like to live in a failed state, right? Somewhere where, for him, he's an ethnic minority, so he was subject to a lot of violence. He saw other people, he's Hazara, other Hazara people get killed. You know, he was told, you don't belong here. You know, he's essentially, you know, from a caste of people that is, you know, always being pushed aside and told they don't belong and not given rights. So I think, you know, he also gave this sort of powerful reminder of the fact that we do need protections, right? We need some kind of justice. I mean, the film tries, you know, one thing, the show is called Visionary Activist, right? And so the film is the third film I've made, and all my films are about philosophy. I make films about ideas. But in this film was a deeper kind of challenge because democracy is a very paradoxical beast. And it's both theory and practice. It's action and reflection. It's head and it's heart. It's emotional, it's intellectual. And so the film kind of moves between these registers where, you know, I'm asking, again, I'm treating people as though they're philosophers, right? You know, what does democracy mean to you? But the answers are always going to be intense because people's lives are intense. I mean, most people, even in a country like the United States, are struggling to make ends meet, struggling to provide for their families, you know, feeling that there's racism, that there's sexism, that there's all of these oppressive forces. And so that dynamic is really, you know, essential, I think, to the film and to how we need to think about democracy. Again, moving away from this idea that democracy is just procedures. I mean, procedures are important, and how we structure our democracy is really key to determining who has power and who has a voice. But also that it's something, you know, it's also our daily relations and our sense of well-being. And that I think that's something that, at least if you look at a lot of the discourse around democracies, not so much in films, but in books that have been published since the 2016 election, there's an emphasis on norms and rules and institutions and not enough emphasis on actually democracy as something that goes beyond the sphere of sort of conventional electoral politics into these other realms of life, be it education, why borders exist. Criminal justice system, which is addressed in the film, democracy in the workplace. And the last thing I'll say is that you mentioned Eulalia, the woman, the immigrant factory worker from Guatemala. So
thank you.
I filmed there. She works at a factory called Opportunity Threads in North Carolina, in the mountains of North Carolina. And what's fascinating about it is it's one of the only remaining textile factories in an area that used to be full of textile factories, but that were decimated by NAFTA. But what sets this factory apart is not only that it's democratically run, it's a cooperative, but it's run by Guatemalan immigrants who are mainly Highland Maya. So they're actually indigenous. And of course, displaced because of the Civil War that originated because of American destabilization campaigns in service of corporate interests. So why is there migration? Well, often because places are destabilized, not because people think America is the greatest place on earth and want to live here, but because they can no longer survive where they come from. But what's fascinating about Opportunity Threads is that here's this factory work job. Here is this, you know, well-paid, solid factory work, the kind we fetishize, but it's actually immigrants making this kind of work, making this business work, and doing it by getting rid of the bosses and sharing power. And so what you have in that scene, I filmed with them with the intention of you know, bringing up the question of democratizing the economy, democratizing the workplace. It just happened to be that the shoot was scheduled for two days after the election of Donald Trump, and so everything they had built was at risk. So it became a scene that is at once about the potential of self-rule, but also the fragility of democracy, which I think we're all feeling on some level these days.
Right, and I guess it's her coworker also. I know it's 2 days after Trump was elected. And he says we work hard. We're contributing to the economy here, and he includes us. He defines us as rapists and thieves. You know, and it's like right. But one of the things that you know, to be agents of citizen trickster in some way is the art form of did you know, which you are providing many things. The more we know, the better, because nobody minds being asked, did you know? Did you know that a major part of, you know, refurbishing the manufacturing in North Carolina is this particular, did you know about that? You know, because people go, I didn't know. You know, and so your film, you know, What is Democracy, is full of, did you know about this? And, you know, towards the end, you have Cornel West, who's threaded through the film, you know, bringing up Dostoevsky, you know, and the conversation about people want to be followers. They don't really want to be free. And we bring up Bob Marley in contrast. No, everybody wants to be free. You know, and this conversing, what story shall we animate? And then he says, and this is, I think, the way to go, he says democracy is an experiment. It is, you know, it's a nature's evolutionary genius experiment, and he calls himself a holy fool. And we go, yeah, we want to speak to the holy fool in everyone, you know, and there's beauty in, well, there is beauty in everybody you interviewed, but it's true, the more hair-raising ones were where you just ask sort of slack, you know, American youth, what's democracy? What's the impediment to democracy? Well, immigration, because blonde people don't get money. That was tough, but it was good of you to just breathe. You just breathe through that, right?
Yeah, I mean, those are the sort of answers that are not so surprising or revelatory, but it's important.
Right.
It was important for me to include a spectrum of perspectives, because after all, it is a film about democracy. And I thought a lot about throughout the film, there's actually quite a few, you know, anti-democratic, downright racist young women in the film. And I thought that that was only fair because, A, I encountered quite a few of them, but also because I'm a feminist filmmaker, so I featured all sorts of brilliant women throughout the film. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, I should be, you know, be honest that there's a powerful minority that is very anti-democratic right now, and that understand that democracy just this is the roots of conservatism, this kind of aristocratic pro-hierarchy perspective that says, wow, democracy would threaten my position at the top of the ladder. So this young woman who's only 21 says, I don't care much about democracy. I just care about the American dream and that ability to climb.
Right.
I want my own opportunity more than I want your freedom. You know, I live for myself and my status. And so that's an important strand of politics and political theory. So it had to be incorporated. I mean, I think the Greeks are sort of a recurring theme in the film, in part because I was filming while modern Greece is going through this intense aftermath of the global economic crisis. And also it was, as you mentioned, reading the description, you know, the epicenter of the arrival of refugees, mainly from Syria, but also from other countries in Northern Africa and the Middle East. And so being there, I wanted to play with the sort of mythologies of ancient Athens. But one thing I found was that actually there's a lot to critique there. Of course, you know, women weren't part of the demos, and it was a society based on slavery, much like the society we live in. They had a kind of very limited conception of who could be a citizen. But they did have one innovation that I think is important to remember, is they actually were quite class conscious. This enraged the sort of aristocrats and the oligarchs to no end. And there was an understanding that democracy is rule of the many. Democracy is when the demos have power, or kratos. But what that necessarily means is rule of the poor, because the poor always outnumber the rich. And so there's some powerful, you know, insights that have been sort of purposely forgotten over time, right? I mean, democracy is incompatible with rule of the rich, which is what we have today. We essentially live in oligarchy. And so, you know, I try to have a sort of complicated to history through the film, right? To show that there's always been these sort of struggles, that even the limited democratic progress that was made in a place like Athens was only made because people rioted, because people fought for their rights. You know, of course, they didn't usher in utopia. And that we're part of this ongoing struggle, that democracy isn't something we just have. It's something we have to keep reimagining, keep expanding, and keep fighting for.
Right, and then just for the offering play of it all, I'm always working with language, and I know we're in a very fighting default setting language. But I do also love Janine Benyus, founder of Biomimicry. Rather than looting nature, why don't we borrow her recipes? Once on show, she said, "Do you know how bees have democracy?" And I go, "No, tell me, please." And she said, "Well, it's great when they need to move or make a big decision, but moving is big, little scout bees will go out, and they will come back and dance what they saw about the different locations where they were." And then different bees will go with them. "I want to check out your site." And when it's a majority of bees who go see, then they all go there. And I also like that there was a biology film about, you know, a herd of, I can't remember, elk, you know, but something in Africa. But they said it's very important when the herd decides to go drink water, because it can't be too late, but it also can't be when the lions are there, you know. And there was, you know, one guy and lots of does, and they assumed he was the leader, but they watched, and at a certain point, one doe put up her head and looked towards the water, and then another and another. And when the majority, they all went. So it wasn't the guy. He was just the sperm donor. And I just wanted to bring this in as the dancing. Yes, we want to fight for things, yeah, okay, but we do want to dance for democracy as well.
I actually love that. So the bees actually, there's a companion book to the film. I mean, they're not really companions. They're sisters, I guess. But the film is so much of the film is implicit, because I want the viewer to think for themselves. I see the film as an invitation to think. And in the book, I get to go down more, you know, sort of theoretical alleyways and have more footnotes. And so each chapter in the book is a paradox. A paradox, I think, is central to the democratic project. So there's a temporal challenge. There's how do we balance our needs today with those of the future? And how do we balance the local and the global? How do we balance freedom and equality? How do we balance coercion and choice? And one chapter is actually about expertise and mass opinion. We can't all be experts at everything, but we need experts. And, you know, that chapter actually opens with long, extended reflections on the bees, you know, who at first the early observers, Aristotle was a keen observer of bees. You know, he assumed that the big bee was the king. And then, I think it was 1609, a book was written. It was like, oh, no, actually, somebody observed them and realized, no, it's a feminine, and called this book The Feminine Monarchy, to correct the gender issue. They noticed this king, you know, of course the big one had to be the king, but then they noticed he was laying eggs, so that kind of messed up that theory. But then later observers realized that, just as you said, it's actually a democracy. It's actually a kind of worker cooperative.
It's
a kind of worker cooperative led by sisters. The bees, the worker bees are sisters. And what's interesting about them is studies show that they almost always pick the best home site. And the question is, well, why does their democracy work so well? I mean, one is, you know, it's evolved. You can look and say, okay, they're making a relatively simple decision. But I think one point for humans to take from observing them is that they're actually reasonable. They meet the standard of reason that we fetishize, because there's no bees paying other bees off to, you know, dance for a subprime home site. There actually is no such thing as a hive mind. No bee just like says, oh, she's cool, I'll follow her. Hive minds are people things. People do the hive mind. Bees don't do the hive mind. Bees go and look for themselves. And so I'm always for humbling ourselves and having a bit of humility and realizing, you know, we shouldn't assume that we're superior to our non-human animal brethren. So I'm with you on that.
No, I do. I love that. What did you say? It's hive mind.
That a hive mind is a human phenomenon. The bees don't actually have a hive mind. They make they check things out for themselves and make rational decisions.
and I don't know of any species or bee or that has corruption. Right.
Exactly.
I mean, what I like to say to everybody, really, and when I'm having a challenge to spiral out of polarity with somebody, like, is I go, no species on this planet would outsource leadership to someone who did not care about the well-being of the community. No other species. It's like, let's put that in our pipe and smoke it. And I want to just bring up, you know, when I was introduced to a friend said, that's the most conservative person in the room, go talk to him. I go, okay. And educated conservatives, we want a big conversing. And so my future conservative friend, Joe, said, what do you know about Edmund Burke? And I go, ooh, not much. And he goes, well, this conversation about big government, small government is irrelevant. You know, Edmund Burke, sort of conservative thinker, but he put forward, the more we cultivate qualities, inward qualities of citizenship, the fewer outer rules we will need. And I go, this is a good conversation, you know? And it's intrinsic to your film, right? In a way, I mean, the film is a diaspora. It's so rich, and that's why I want everyone to have a copy and to show it to your neighbors and to have conversations around it, because it begins conversing, and we want to get to some challenging thoughts that some of your interview people came up about democracy and exclusion. But first, just to pause for a moment on you know, part of the conversation, what is democracy, and also what is it to be a citizen, is part of that.
How do we, Wendy Brown, who's a political philosopher at Berkeley, brings up Rousseau's paradox. So I love paradoxes. Again, the book, each chapter is a paradox. Mm. And so one of the foundational paradoxes of political philosophy is this question of kind of the citizenry. It's basically, how do you get a democratic people out of an undemocratic people, right? If democracy in its structured form involves these sort of rules, institutions, habits, almost sensibilities, it seems to need those in advance of them being put into place. Like, where do you get these democratic people with a vision, the visionary, as to use your radio show's word, who can actually do this? So there seems to be a kind of chicken and the egg dilemma there. Hopefully the film is showing that, you know, well, we create that democratic, you know, we'll never be able to sort of answer that paradox. We just have to kind of keep moving ahead. And we find ourselves often, unfortunately, in contexts where our democratic sensibilities are actually being undermined. In our society today, you know, that's quite often the case. So in our workplaces, we submit to a total tyranny of the boss. Often most of us don't work at democratic cooperatives, right? We sort of check our rights at the door and we do what we're told and we wear what we're supposed to wear and we say what we're supposed to say and we go to the bathroom when we're supposed to go to the bathroom. So we don't have democracy in those places. And we also don't have anything resembling democracy in our healthcare system where it's, where, you know, we live in a country where the vast majority of bankruptcies actually come from medical debt. I mean, most people can't even pay to access the, you know, basic medical coverage, let alone the best. And we don't have it in our schools, which is why the film lingers on the question of education and sort of tries to acknowledge that education is really key. Well, also, I talked to a group of students, middle school age, two groups of middle school age students, and what they tell me is, sure, democracy gets mentioned, right? Rules and government and, you know, different branches of government, a kid says. But what the real message of what they're taught is, basically, don't ask for anything. Don't stand up for yourself. Keep your head down and accept what you get. Because what the kids tell me, you know, some very sweet kids who can't be more than 12 or 13 years old tell me is that they ask the administrators of their school to heat up their lunch. And that this simple request, not even for the food to be delicious, but for it just to be warm, is met with intense resistance and scorn from the administration. But these kids are so astute, they realize that it's not even just that the teachers and the principal is against them, but actually that the adults in their lives don't have any power either. There are bigger structures controlling them, and you know, that this happens. There's the county level, they say, the state level, the federal level. So what you see in this scene is both this incredible democratic capacity from children and a desire to be engaged and to actually have a kind of collective power, but that we're in a society where that citizen spirit is actually beaten out. So that's, you know, that's thinking about the citizen in a sense of meaning something more than just whether or not you have papers or legal status, but in terms of just being engaged and our institutions. So the film, you know, tries to address both. On the one hand, the sort of democratic spirit, the spirit of, you know, participation, of pushing the envelope. But then it also addresses the question of the legal boundaries of who's in the polity or not, and who is excluded, and, you know, who right. is included in that we of the people.
Right. Now, we want to come back to that and not voting, but by lot in a moment, and also excluding. Mm-hmm. But so our perfect guest for today on the Visionary Activist Show, and we are in Fund Drive. It is a democratic experiment of a listener-sponsored radio. It's not always perfect, but we aspire. And so we do depend on the citizen listeners, the citizen trickster listeners, to dedicate so that we can have green energy to function. So our perfect for now guest is Astra Taylor, director of the movie What is Democracy, which I was delighted that you didn't know that KPFA had selected it as one of its premium pledge enticements, you know, and then I was even more delighted that I scored you. Again, Astra is the director of What is Democracy that we're offering for a pledge of $120 all at once, or $10 a month, nothing else, but, yeah, by calling 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-439-5732, or online at kpfa.org. I see by magic radio telepathy that there are 171 people listening online right now. We do have listeners in Syria. Hi there. You know, and often later on the podcast, and South Africa, and Japan, and Australia, and all over this country. So you guys, Gaias, can also contribute. Now would be wonderful, or later, $120 for this wonderful movie, or any amount, and just adding dedication as you pledge, by the pledging of this amount may Democratic Airwaves persist in perpetuity, or whatever. Again, by calling 1-800-439-5732 or online for you web listeners, kpfa.org. All right, now back to Astra. So yeah, you know, you bring up some important, difficult things. We are calling on the holy fool, really, and everybody. A super smart woman who says democracy always has exclusion, right? And so, in a sense, it needs a defining. And how do we define we? Right, and just as a little sidebar, the most radical dystopian novel ever written really is a novel called We by Eugene Zamyatin. It's where Huxley and Orwell got most of their ideas, but it was written in Russia. And it's all about, yes, who is defining we? Are we defining we, or is the government defining we? So we'll say more about, you know, this is a complex, and again, we all want to be conversing. Democracy always has exclusion, said one of your interviewing smart women, yeah. Intellectuals.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the thorny, one of the thorny issues, and I think it's something, though, that we can't just wish away. We live in a world where there's 7.5 billion people, and it's extremely hard to have a democratic conversation with 7.5 billion people. And yet we live in a world where we can't turn away from our global consciousness. We live in a world where there's climate change. We live in a world where, there's the potential for epidemics, right? There's also the beautiful potential of sharing ideas, right? There's all sorts of things that don't recognize borders and shouldn't, and that can't be, that will never be sort of contained to this, you know, historically pretty recent and arbitrary idea of the nation state. But I think there's still this question of the we. So, you know, democracy, again, to go back to the definition, which isn't to say the Greeks invented the practice of democracy, but they gave us this word. It's the people rule. And who the people are and how they rule is always open to contestation, debate, reinvention. And that's why I've come to really appreciate this word. When I began the project, I actually thought maybe we need to get rid of this word. You know, it's just been so corrupted. It's been so abused. You know, I was in my 20s as George W. Bush was saying he's going to bring democracy to the Middle East. I mean, just, you know, I was like, how? I couldn't even hear the word. It just, you know, it felt completely exhausted. But now I see that it's got this protean character that, you know, is worth struggling over. The thing is that right now the exclusion function, so I think you do need a we for things to be accountable. Who's making this decision? You also need a we so that old idea of participatory democracy can actually become real, right? Like I should have a decision. I should have a say in the decisions that affect my life. So I look at that workers' co-op we just talked about in North Carolina, and I think they know who the we are of their factory, right? They're making decisions. I shouldn't go in there and boss them around. And I've also been in dysfunctional situations. For example, I was quite active in Occupy Wall Street, and I'm still active in one of the ongoing offshoots, which is called the Debt Collective, which organizes debtors to fight for debt cancellation and public goods. You know, one problem with Occupy was that anyone could come to the assembly and make a decision, but that people often would participate in bad faith. There was no way to exclude people who were participating only to disrupt. And then people would vote for things, but then they wouldn't actually enact them. They were kind of, you could have rights without responsibilities. And this was, you know, very, very difficult. It just wasn't sustainable, obviously, or it would have sustained, which it did not. You know, this question of the we, I think right now we live in a world so riven by this history of colonization, imperialism, divisions based on, you know, divisions and exclusions based on gender, based on race, ethnicity, and so on, right? So we need to absolutely get over all of these horrible exclusions. And I think the real problem with the exclusion is when it's in the service of exploitation. Right. So right now, you know, our society today is the politics demands that, you know, there's this anti-immigrant fervor, but our economy actually demands the labor of excluded people who don't have papers. That's like the contradiction, the sort of toxic contradiction of our society right now, you know, is it vilifies immigrants while also needing their labor. In a society where we have transform their economic system, where there aren't, you know, a handful of billionaires controlling the world's resources, then I think we could start to say, okay, well, hold on, where is the boundary of this community so they can make decisions that affect them? When do decisions have a bigger impact? You know, how can we make sure that boundaries are permeable, right? So instead of thinking about putting a period at the end of our we put a comma, right? Mm-hmm. These are things, I think it's not something we can just say, okay, we are going to walk away from this challenge and embrace some universal ideal, because also there's a history of imperialism, of forcing people to be part of a we they don't want to be in, right? Which is why there have been decolonial struggles, which is why indigenous communities are fighting to be separate. So I'm just, my film is philosophical. It's meant to say, this is tricky.
Right. No, that's why it's worthy of conversing, Con, with versing. Yeah. We're all in this giant conversation together. You know, and, you know, it's like at Standing Rock, you know, and there was many great older women, Faith Spotted Eagle. So when people arrived, she said, welcome. And here is what we are doing. Here is our experiment. Mm-hmm. If you want to contribute to this, you are welcome. And it's kind of like after the Russian Revolution, the Ukrainian Nestor Makhachev. And the Ukrainians, they had an anarchist experiment, and so they said to everybody, here's what we're doing, and if you want to participate, that's great, and if you don't, that's fine, we let you live. So they had doctors and educated class, and it was Trotsky who said, you know, surrender your army, and they're like, no, and he's like, well, come to a meeting, and they did, and he killed them all. But again, here's our experiment, and I just wanted to, you know, again, it's a little spiraling off of what you just said, but important. It's like a buddy, Steve Behrman, says, the answer to the drug problem, improve reality. The answer to the immigration problem, improve reality. And I remember talking to a Turkish woman judge, and we were getting on pretty well, and then she spun into, you know, just vituperative anti-immigrant, anti-Islamic immigrant. And I was like, what if a fraction of the money we spent on, you know, walls and opposition was to make everywhere more wonderful? You know, not everybody wants to leave their home country if it were okay in Honduras, in whatever, you know, I just think that wants to be part of conversing. And I will be responsibly pitching a great team to people. I think we're being too fascinating for people to pledge. But I also wanted to honor there's so much in your film. That's why everybody should have it as a conversation starter. And I would actually play it, you know, for the man that we were having a civil conversation, but he goes, no, I really like Trump and Fox News, and that's the only not Fox News, and climate change is a hoax or whatever. I think he would watch this movie. I really do, and I would want to have it on hand, going, and now let's talk, right? It's like, watch this movie. What is democracy? And now let's converse. Just on top of this, but you do mention, there's the thorny thing, and the model of equality, like almost Pope Valentine. The reason we have Valentine's Day is almost Pope Valentine. He was for complete equality in the church, that men and women served, and you rotated positions. One week you were the bishop, then you were a layperson, you moved around. Almost, right? But you also honor somebody who said, you know, a Greek woman, a scholar, who said in Greece, you didn't elect leaders by voting, but by lot. It was random.
Yeah, this is quite an interesting thing, I think, for us to hear as we are colonized by 2020. You know, Americans tend to think, and not just the U.S., but, you know, political science, you know, across the sort of, at least Anglo-Saxon world, probably throughout Europe, you know, really have this idea of liberal democracy as elections. That's sort of the number one definition, you know, free and fair elections. And what's fascinating is that the same scholars who uphold this as a definition, and of course, all of us who just assume that it's true, you know, also know a whole, you know, people also revere ancient Athens and think of it as the mythic, you know, cradle of democracy. But to the Athenians, democracy was not compatible with elections. They saw elections, they were very clear on this, elections are aristocratic because the rich and the well-born and the persuasive, the people who have sort of mastered the art of rhetoric, tend to win. They have this advantage. I mean, today we could say the people who have had a long stint on reality television. I mean, elections are not, they're not fair. And so what they did was they devised these sort of very ingenious systems of selection instead of election. And, you know, it's called sortition. So using randomness to randomly select people from the citizenry who then were basically tasked with running the government with everything essentially except leading military operations, which is where they did have elections, and but you know, running the city welfare system, taking care of the horses, running the mint, I mean, sort of like proposing the laws that then the assembly would vote on, all sorts of things were just delegated to regular people. And it was as though everyone expected would be today as though everyone could expect to serve in Congress. And you know, the film doesn't get into contemporary examples of this, but of course we have vestiges of this in our jury system. That's a situation where we still think, oh, a random selection of citizens should have a say. They are trustworthy.
Right.
And recently in Ireland, it's quite fascinating. I mean, I'm sure your listeners know that there was the referendum around abortion. And so there's been a massive breakthrough in terms of women's reproductive health in a country where you might not expect it. But that vote was actually preceded by what was called the Citizens' Assembly, run by the government, where 100 citizens, so representative in terms of age, so I think they went from something like 18 all the way into their 80s or so, came together. And over the course of 5 months, deliberated about abortion. And then they came out with recommendations for the public. And so what this did was it created a sense of, you know, of sort of legitimacy, right? Of sort of the people got together and thought they didn't have any power to impose their views, but their views were broadcast and shared. And it was this sense of, oh, people, regular people thought this through. And they made very, very intelligent determinations, thinking, okay, actually, let's totally rethink this thing. The laws on the books are archaic, and so I think there's something there. I mean, there's also something there for those of us who worry about money in politics, right? Because you certainly aren't worrying about dialing for dollars if you've just been randomly selected and you're going to go back to your regular life as a teacher or a sanitation worker or
I think this
a
is,
writer.
This is- I think, yeah, no, I think this is good to bring up, and I'm going to reluctantly release you because you're too fascinating and mesmerizing, and I must be dedicated to raising money for our station, but not quite yet. Almost. I will do double duty in the remaining 13 minutes. But it also reminds you, you know, just, again, we want bubbles of holy fools going, what about this and what about that, and who tried this and who tried that? But yeah. I have a friend who was a kind of radical teacher at Harvard Law, and he was... He wanted random for everything. When you died, you spun the wheel, and yes, the greengrocer won your fortune. Right, and I go, well, all right, that's fun to think about too. In a way, just random, just a little bit there. All right,
yeah.
So we're on our way out. You are too wonderful, and I will get your book as well. Democracy May Not Exist, but we'll miss it when it's gone. And I hope to have future conversations. But do you want to do a just exhortation to our fantastic listeners everywhere about, you know, pledge for this fantastic movie and support this station so that we can have more conversations with Astra Taylor?
I will, and I'll tell you what, I think public media is so essential. The film does not get into the role of media, and that's partly because I had written my earlier book. So in 2014, I published a book called The People's Platform, which is about the political economy of the internet. And what I came to in that is that the way our media system is structured is essential. Right now, advertising dollars online, when we use our free services, Facebook, Google, whatever, we're, of course, paying with our data. We're paying with our privacy. We might think, okay, it's a small price. I see some dumb ad in the corner. But actually, there's pernicious social consequences because you're not seeing what your neighbor, what your fellow citizens are seeing. You're not seeing the discriminatory ads. You're not seeing the predatory loans they're being offered. You're not seeing the fact that women aren't being pitched the same well-remunerated, prestigious career opportunities. And so it's so important for us as citizens to resist that model of funding media, of funding journalism, and to fund it ourselves, and to either do so through the sustainer model or through demanding, you know, true public media, demanding media as a public good. So I think these spaces are absolutely essential, and also spaces where there's discourse, where there's listening. I mean, we are obsessed with freedom of speech in this country, but what I came out of my film, What is Democracy? You know, the simple question, what I came out of the film realizing was that listening is as important a political act as speaking, but we just don't have a vocabulary for it. We don't value it.
Yet.
And so
yet.
What I love about radio too is that, you know, it's people being willing to practice that really important, vital political act of listening, both the host like you, but also the people tuning in, and, you know, and that listening is the other side of the communicative coin, right? If listening didn't matter, people wouldn't bother to speak. But it's a wonderful thing, and stations like KPFA are really essential, even in our, social media-addled age.
Yes. No, that's beautiful, and it's beautiful to have so much of your craft. Craft means power from dedication, you know, dedicated to this this necessary conversing, especially now. So I look forward to more conversing and to checking out everything you've ever done or ever written. Thank you so much, Astra Taylor.
Hey, thanks for having me.
My
Good
pleasure. Okay, team. All righty. So, Astra Taylor is great. We have raised $585 so far, but we really want to go for $2,000 like Mitch Jezerich did. Why not? Here we go. So, by calling 1-800-439-5732, you can have this really useful DVD, What is Democracy? I'm not just blowing whatever it is. I really am enthused about this beautiful, composed, crucial movie that is so useful. You might not play all of it to resistant people, but certainly parts of it, and to everybody else, we would play all of it and go, now let's talk. Let's talk about this. And the kinship. And the big issues coming our way, and I liked what she, and also there's not one mention of the hegemony of the neoliberal whatever. It's all accessible language. That's good. We have a smart person. I know that we've been doing a theme of 1969 for the fun of it, and pertinent. I think of everybody born in 1969, the Uranus-Pluto-Jupiter conjunction, is like a positive sleeper cell, that the zeitgeist of 1969 is a positive sleeper cell itself coming alive. Now, there we go. So everybody who lived through the 60s, call now. Or who was born in the 60s, you are the 60s. You know, call 1-800-439-5732. Or we're magnetizing you. Or pledge online, kpfa.org. Any amount is really magic. Any amount with dedication. So you can have this really useful DVD, What is Democracy, for a pledge of $120 or $10 a month. Or that's great, you know, or anything. Here's $50, $500, $50,000 just to surprise people, whatever. That's all good. And again, the movie, it is our responsibility. You know, again, when she does the interview of the Guatemalan woman in North Carolina at this factory bringing work alive for everybody, and it's a, you know, and the woman talks about, you know, hope, and then Astra says, and what about now? And she goes, now, 2 days after Trump's election, now it's kind of sad. And she says, other children, when her kids get on the school bus, say, the president won, so now you have to go back home to your... Anyway, so we're all part of this conversing. We remember Dion Fortune said, the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom, and tolerance. And we go, radio is magic. It's magic. We're here together, spiraling expanded wisdom and tolerance into group collective mind. You know, if the Dementors of Doom, monstrosity feeding on cruelty, creating mob mind, inviting the most ignorant and the worst part of people to create mob mind. So it behooves us, increasingly dedicated, to invite the best, right? And to spiral out the animating story and to have the playfully great, important conversation conversations, you know, about what is it to be a citizen, you know, and a number of the interviews that Estra would ask people, you know, oh, what about democracy? Do you vote? No, I'm never going to vote. Never going to vote. And it's like, huh. Well, the Greeks did coin the word idiotis from somebody who cared so little about collective well-being that they would not participate. You go, oh, okay, that's right. So there's that. And the previous show, Blessed Mr. Jezerich, we are a democratic experiment, aspiring here at KPFA, good teammates, yay. You know, and they were featuring the radio thing, partly produced by Kevin Cartwright, another great teammate here at KPFA, on Altamont and the contrast with Woodstock. Well, it's a pertinent thing right now. You know, that creativity not be feeding a colonial celebrity culture, but it be real magic, you know, that it be dedicated to collective well-being, that part of it is creative craft and part of it is the invisible. And that's why, again, radio is so powerfully magic and democratic radio, the whole history of Pacifica. You know, humans come and go, we're all befoibled, but Pacifica is the animated intelligence of peace. And that's what we're pledging to. You know, we're pledging because you like the Visionary Activist Show and you often listen to it. We convene every week. That's right. And as Astra said, it's true. Listening is important. Lots of email to and fro. Very open to guest suggestions. There we go. You know, and also our skills at being able to ask the right questions, which almost always disrupts polarity. If somebody's like, ah, you go, well, what's your definition of a desirable community? What's your definition of wealth? What are the things? So again, we are offering this lovely enticement, worthy enticement, the film What is Democracy? A DVD for a pledge of $120 or $10 a month. What the hell? By calling 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, or pledging online. We have lots of podcast people, you in the future, but also lots of web people, you know, kpfa.org. $120 would be great. $120,000 would be adorable. $12 would be witty. All is welcome. All is welcome. We're bees dancing the desirable future. And with Astra Taylor, there were so many. I see. That's right. I don't know who to thank. we're winding down. But come on, team. Just for the fun of it, pledge on behalf of the animals. You know, we have a beautiful moon. Oops, oh, there's a spider right here on the microphone. Hi there. So this is spider radio. This is flora fauna radio. We have humans, but we also, you know, spiral it out to the dogs and the creatures and those who can't vote, because it really is democratic animism and leadership models derived from nature is a whole other, you know, conversation we briefly touched on. But also, you know, to keep the station going, absolutely, because it is increasingly necessary as we see the impedimental tyranny of how questions are phrased at the debate and whatnot, and the news narrative, it's getting tighter. So we want larger, again, inviting everybody's imagination and ingenuity and dedication as well, and effective dedication. So this movie, as a gift, as an enticement, is worthy in that realm. What is Democracy? There are many, many things that we didn't get to that are important we will in the fullness of time. There we go. but also, what can we do collectively? What is the magic to explore, to create an atmosphere? Since radio is invisible, here we are all communing backstage. You know, it says to contribute to the atmosphere conducive to the desirable. You know, to go outdoors and pour cool water on the crossroads to cool out the hot polarity, that we be agents of liberating trickster and spiraling. All yours by participating and calling 1-800-439-5732. Just for the fun of it, we got 20 seconds, or really less. No, less than that. Okay, team, woof, woof, woof. I hope we made $1 million. We will reconvene next week with an equally fantabulous and nutrient-rich proffering for all of us citizen tricksters. Woof, woof, woof. And thank you, Erica Bridgman, and your journeying into even more creative realms at the station. Mwah. Thank you. We will reconvene next week. Caroline Casey, follow me on Twitter, Stand Up Coyote. Woof.